Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in 1928 that the song Old Man River was recorded by Paul Whiteman and his orchestra. Who was the song's featured vocalist on that 1928 recording? Hint, the song is from the Broadway musical Showboat. So was that A, Bing Crosby, B, Enrico Caruso, C, Louis Armstrong, or D, Doris Day? So who was that singer on the 1928 recording of the song Old Man River? And question number two, it was on this day back in 1964 that the very first country album topped the U.S. pop album chart. What was the name of that chart-topping country album? Was that A, Wichita Lineman by Glen Campbell? Was it B, Harper Valley PTA by Jeannie C. Riley? Was it C, Act Naturally by Buck Owens? Or was it D, Ring of Fire by Johnny Cash? So what was that album that topped the U.S. pop album chart in 1964? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of January the 10th. Well, it was on this day back in 1956 that Elvis Presley recorded his first songs as an RCA Victor artist in Nashville. Elvis recorded Heartbreak Hotel, I Was the One, I'm Counting on You, I Got a Woman, and Money Honey, 1956 today. And it was 51 years ago today, 1968, that the Daily Mirror of London reported that Jimi Hendrix had moved into the London townhouse where George Frederick Handel was believed to have composed Water Music and Messiah on this day back in 1968. And in country music news, we have this article entitled, Jason Aldean Raises a Glass to Songwriters. The difference between I Don't Drink Anymore and I Don't Drink Any More by Allison Bonagoro, published in CMT.com on the 3rd of January, 2020. I'll drink to this. One of the very best songs on Jason Aldean's new album, Nine, is his brand new single called I Don't Drink Anymore. And it sounds like Aldean and I both love it for the lyrics. He explained as much in a video on social media where he talks about the tune's writers, Kelly Lovelace, CJ Solar, and Neil Thrasher. Obviously, Neil is a great writer and the way he phrases things is really good, Aldean says. So I started listening to the song and kind of getting into it, and I'm like, all right, I get where we're going here. This is cool. And when it got to the hook, that's like, I don't drink anymore, but I don't drink any less. I was like, man, that is really good. I'm stoked about that one. I think people are going to dig it. Thrasher has written a long list of songs for Aldean since he started in the country songwriting career 20 years ago. Rearview Town, Tattoos on This Town, Flyover States, and Night Train, just to name a few. But he's also had country credits on songs for artists like Rascal Flatts, Fast Cars and Freedom, Take Me There and Banjo, Kenny Chesney, There Goes My Life, and I Lost It, Randy Houser, How Country Feels, Lee Bryce, She Ain't Right, and many, many more. And in classical music news, we have this article titled, Notre Dame Cathedral Only Has a 50% Chance of Being Saved, Rector Says. This article is written by Kyle McDonald, published in ClassicFM.com on the 27th of December, 2019. 7 months after the fire ravaged the beloved Gothic monument, the cathedral's future remains in peril. The rector of Notre Dame Cathedral has said the damaged building is still so fragile that there's only a 50-50 chance of the structure being saved. The rector also warned of the chance of scaffolding falling onto the three vaults, adding, "You can see the building is still very fragile." 50,000 tubes of scaffolding installed before this year's fire are damaged and are at risk of collapsing. However, the scaffolding is still supporting the stone structures of the building, creating a headache for repairs. The rector also described his heartache that Notre Dame couldn't hold Christmas services this year for the first time since the French Revolution. The fire, which broke out on Monday evening, 15 April, is thought to be linked into the structure's ongoing $6.8 million renovation project. Police treated the fire as an accident. Firefighters managed to save the main stone structure of the monument, including the two bell towers, the organ, and the iconic rose window. The Associated Press reports that restoration work isn't likely to begin until 2021. Repairs to the damage are complicated by the need to stabilize the structure. The cathedral was built during the 12th and 13th century and is considered one of the world's finest examples of French Gothic architecture. President Emmanuel Macron has vowed that the cathedral will be rebuilt even more beautifully, adding that he wants the work completed in the next 5 years. Experts have warned the reconstruction could take decades. André Rieu, the Dutch violinist and conductor, has offered to provide 700 tons of steel, originally used to build his famous Schönbrunn Palace replica, to help erect the scaffold for the restoration of beautiful Notre Dame. Apple has also said they will make a donation. CEO Mark Cook wrote on Twitter, "We are heartbroken for the French people and those around the world for whom Notre Dame is a symbol of hope. Apple will be donating to the rebuilding efforts to help restore Notre Dame's precious heritage for future." Music in Notre Dame Cathedral. The Notre Dame School of Composers played a very important role in the history of music. French composers led the development of polyphonic music in the 12th and 13th centuries. Throughout the 19th and 20th centuries, the cathedral was renowned for its traditions of French organ and choral music. It also boasts the largest organ in France, with 5 keyboards, 109 stops, and nearly 8,000 pipes. The instrument, miraculously, was saved in the blaze. And in jazz and swing music news, we have this article entitled, The Story Behind the Song Three Little Fishies. This is published on January 14, 2019 by Kylie Bisson, spindiddy.com. Did your mother sing this song to you when you were young? Mine sure did. And I would sing right along as best I could. This delightful song tells the story of three little fishies who disobey their mother and swim over a dam and out to sea. Luckily, the story ends happily when they return to the pool in the meadow and are reunited with Mama. Here is the story behind the song. Saxie Dowell, a sax player in Hal Kemp's orchestra, quote-unquote, borrowed the song from three University of Tennessee sorority sisters. He had met the three while visiting and performing in Knoxville in 1939, where they sang their fish song for him. In March of that year, Kemp and the orchestra recorded Three Little Fishies with a trio of singers called the Smoothies. The university friends, of course, heard the song and had a lawyer contact Dowell on their behalf. Dowell didn't contest the claim that he had taken their song. He sent them a check to buy the rights. The trio never received any royalties from the song. Kay Kaiser from Rocky Mount, North Carolina, and his orchestra also recorded the song in 1939. They had a multi-million seller, and their version, spending 9 weeks in the number one spot on the Billboard charts. Kay toured the Midwest with his band in the 1930s. The band became regulars in Chicago's Black Hawk Restaurant, a venue that was famed for bringing in big band entertainers. One of the band's most popular offerings was something called the College, spelled with a K, of Musical Knowledge, sort of a game show that tested people's knowledge of music. This was how Kaiser became known as the old professor of swing. He graduated, by the way, from UNC Chapel Hill. Three Little Fishies was immensely popular in 1939, and every big band out there was recording it, including the Glenn Miller Band and Orchestra. Their recording of Three Little Fishies, Itty Bitty Poo, featured Marion Hutton and Tex Beneke having fun with the lyrics by inserting some quote-unquote baby talk. Marion was discovered by Glenn Miller when she was only 17 and too young to sing in clubs. To get around this problem, Miller and his wife became her legal chaperones, which allowed this underage young lady access to nightclubs so she could sing with the orchestra. Article skips down, ends with this. No wonder this song has endured the way it has. There were fully 8 different recordings made of Three Little Fishies in 1939 alone. In addition, the song was also recorded by Paul Whiteman and his orchestra, the Andrews Sisters, Spike Jones, the Mills Brothers, Red Norvo and his orchestra, Maria Muldaur, and even the Muppets. Too bad the trio who originally wrote the song didn't retain the rights. Imagine the royalties they would have received. And in music research and technology and predictions, we have this article called Today in 2029. You will love the music written by robots. And this is written by Holly Herndon, published in New York Magazine, November 24th, 2019. The whole title of this article, by the way, is titled The Weirdness Timeline, A Calendar of Predictions, 2029 via 2019. Holly Herndon writes, "We started training the robot with my voice and my husband's, Matt's voice, both of which are in the hundreds of megabytes of Spawn's training info. I made a data set where I sang random phrases within a comfortable range for me, like, aluminum cutlery can often be flimsy. She wore warm, fleecy woolen overalls. Alfalfa is healthy for you." Spawn would digest that information, which could take anywhere from 1 to 20 minutes. We'd all be on Slack together, and we'd get updates like, "Spawn released a new track." Pretty soon, we'll have a very accurate voice models of past vocalists, and that's going to open up questions about what we do with our forefathers' and foremothers' voices. I used to say we'll have infinite Michael Jackson records, but that probably won't happen anymore. Infinite Aretha Franklin records may be the better example. Stones, Honky Tonk Women from 1969, introduces our rock and pop music news. It's entitled Reliving the Stones' Apocalyptic Epic. Their 1969 classic Let It Bleed remains the band's darkest LP, and that's why it sounds perfect right now. This is written by Rob Sheffield, Sound and Vision, published in Rolling Stone, December 2019. December 1969. The Rolling Stones are capping off their decade of triumph with a new album. It's called Let It Bleed. The songs are full of doom, death, and destruction. Right from the start, it's bad news from the opening guitar shivers of Gimme Shelter. That's a kind of end-of-the-world song, really, Mick Jagger told Rolling Stone in 1995 interview. It's apocalypse. The whole record's like that. It's a very rough, very violent era. The Vietnam War, violence on the screens, pillage and burning. 50 years after it came out, Let It Bleed sounds timelier than ever. Amid all the chaos, the Stones made a masterpiece that holds up as the ultimate rock and roll album for bleak times, which is why it feels like the most 2019 album of 1969. Their darkest album, yet also their funniest, not to mention their greatest. They dropped Let It Bleed in the final days of a decade that didn't turn out the way they or anyone else hoped. The drugs, the wars, the riots, the assassinations, it's all just a shot away. These days, Let It Bleed is ripe for rediscovery. The Stones never planned Let It Bleed as a tombstone for the decade. They were just trying to crush it out in time for their fall U.S. tour, ending with a free show at San Francisco's Golden Gate Park. What better place to sum up the era's hopes and ideals? But at the last minute, the concert got relocated to Altamont and turned into the Hell's Angels bloodbath of Gimme Shelter. The Stones dropped Let It Bleed the next day before Altamont. If they'd given another listen to their own album, they probably would have known better than to show up. They made Let It Bleed in the middle of chaos and bad vibes. In other words, their comfort zone. It's their Keithiest album. The one where he plays nearly all the guitars. Brian Jones could no longer function musically. The Week Honky Tonk Women, which led off today's article, hit number one. Brian died in his pool. As Pete Townsend told Rolling Stone at the time, oh, it's a normal day for Brian. The fantastic new deluxe anniversary edition has been remastered in stereo and mono to reveal new nuances. But my favorite way to blast Let It Bleed is on cassette, a battered but beloved 1987 tape with Beggar's Banquet on the other side. The tape has followed me around my entire life, just like these songs have, yet it never stops giving up fresh chills and surprises. If anything sums up the mood, it's the horror show Midnight Rambler, the blues epic where Mick rants about all the bad news coming for everyone. No matter what disasters are going down, Let It Bleed always sounds as though Mick saw it coming. In a way, the Stones saved the scariest moment of their scariest album for the finale. You can't always get what you want. The song has aged in such a beloved standard, it's easy to sleep on how dark it is. But seeing the Stones on stage this summer, ripping it up in a stripped-down four-man version, woke me up to realize how hardcore this song really is. It's the same apocalypse as Gimme Shelter, but it's the kind you have to keep living with when the song is over. Constantly striving and failing to get what you want. 50 years later, that's a story that never gets old, and that's why Let It Bleed stubbornly refuses to fade into the past, just like the Rolling Stones themselves. And in local music news, Elton John's Rocket Man introduces this upcoming concert by the North Carolina Symphony, the music of Elton John, featuring Michael Kavanagh. That's coming up Friday, January 17th at 8 p.m. and Saturday, January 18th at 3 p.m. and 8 p.m. by Mandy Concert Hall, Woolner Stage, Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts, Raleigh. We pay tribute to Sir Elton John's greatest hits, including Rocket Man, Tiny Dancer, Candle in the Wind, Crocodile Rock, Benny and the Jets, and more. I don't understand. It's just my job. So, how did you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day, back in 1928, that the song Old Man River was recorded by Paul Whiteman and his orchestra. Who was the song's featured vocalist on that 1928 recording? Hint, the song is from the Broadway musical Showboat. So was that A, Bing Crosby? B, Enrico Caruso, C, Louis Armstrong, or D, Doris Day? Correct answer is answer A, Bing Crosby. As noted in songfacts.com, first published in 1926, American author and dramatist Edna Ferber's novel Showboat chronicled the lives of a family of performers from the 1880s to the 1920s. They traveled on the Cotton Blossom, a floating theater that provided entertainment for the small, isolated towns on the banks of the Mississippi. The legendary composer Jerome Kern was impressed by the novel and wished to present a musical theater version that followed the lives of the performers, stagehands, and dock workers on a Mississippi showboat. He persuaded the lyricist Oscar Hammerstein II to adapt the book for the stage, and straight away the pair felt the need for a song to pull all the diverse threads of the story together. They came up with Old Man River, which is sung by a black dock worker on the showboat who contrasts the endless rolling of the Mississippi River to the hardships of African Americans. At first, Ferber had been shocked that anyone would want to adapt Showboat as a musical. However, she relates in her autobiography that when Kern first played this song for her, the music mounted, 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 and I give you my word, my hair stood on end. The tears came to my eyes, and I breathed like a heroine in a melodrama. This was great music. It was music that would outlast Kern's day and mine. Showboat opened at the Ziegfeld Theater on Broadway on December 27, 1927. The quality of the musical was recognized immediately by the critics, and audiences flocked to view it. The first hit recording of Old Man River was a surprisingly jazzy up-tempo arrangement by the Paul Whiteman Orchestra, with a young Bing Crosby as the featured vocalist. It gave the new crooner his first number one record. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day, back in 1964, that the very first country album topped the U.S. pop album chart. What was the name of that chart-topping country album? Was it A, Wichita Lineman by Glen Campbell? B, Harper Valley PTA by Jeannie C. Riley? C, Act Naturally by Buck Owens? Or D, Ring of Fire by Johnny Cash? Correct answer, answer D, Ring of Fire by Johnny Cash. As noted in SongFacts.com, according to Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 songs, June Carter wrote this song while driving around aimlessly one night, worried about Cash's wild man ways, and aware that she couldn't resist him. There's no way to be in that kind of hell, no way to extinguish a flame that burns, 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 she wrote. Not long after hearing June's sister Anita's take on the song, Cash had a dream that he was singing it with mariachi horns. Cash's version became one of his biggest hits, and his marriage to June 4 years later helped save his life. The song was based on a poem, Love's Ring of Fire. So, let's close out today's program with an instrumental version of this Ring of Fire. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is the language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast, in our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have a suggestion, leave me a note, 919-832-5138. So long, until.